It is Asara B'Tevis today. It's a fast day. And lately my wife has been listening over to all sorts of tapes of mine over the last few years, because we're preparing another number of tapes for production. And it's fascinating. The comments at the beginning of the shiur give us a feeling of the time and the date and things that are happening in the country. It's something that we find to be very, very informative, and it adds a certain flavor to the tape. So here it is. It's Asara B'Tevis Tavshin Nun Tes. And oh yes, and they tell me, yeah, that's the thing going around now, that in the year 2000 we won't fast on Asara B'Tevis. How do you like that? So I see everybody. I have your interest. Yeah, go ahead. Because there's going to be, at the end of 99, there will be an Asara B'Tevis, and the next one is going to come out in the year 2001, right after. All right. Okay. Well, the possibility, of course, is that if Mashiach comes, we won't fast at all on Asara B'Tevis. Asara B'Tevis. A question, of course, is does Mashiach want to go up against Netanyahu, Shachak, Barak, Begin, Landau, Livnat, etc.? It's very crowded, and I think that Mashiach is a centrist, and the center is more crowded than anybody else. So I think you need oxygen over there. Last night we had a very beautiful simcha in my shul in Har Nof. We officially brought in 5 Sifrei Torah. Now, very, very few times in your lives have you been at a hachnasa of 5 Sifrei Torah. There were 6 that were stolen on Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, and I said then that the Rebbeinu Shem is going to give us back Sifrei Torah to take their place. Of the 5, only 1 is a replacement. The other 5 that were stolen are in the process of being, new Sifrei Torah being written. So by the time it's all over, the only ones that will have lost on this was the insurance company, but we're going to end up with about 5 or 6 Sifrei Torah more than we had before. Because there are 4 new ones now, and then the other 6 are in the process of being prepared. So it was very nice. You know, there's a whole system the way it's done over here, with the chuppah, with a tahalucha. What do you call a tahalucha?
Music,
a parade, and the children with torches. Yeah. So we went through the whole bit, and of course, Yonatan Fund was the one who played very beautifully. We had a dinner in shul, in addition to the fact that there was a ceremony in shul. He was the one who played. He plays very well. He uses it very, very well. So if we're giving already publicity to the funds, we might as well to Bela Rabinowitz, who's now taking the place of Bela Gold at the door. Her husband and children were the caterers. We had a dinner after the Hachnasa Sefer Torah. Absolutely magnificent. I'm telling you, it was great. And thank God I invited my grandchildren to come. Boy, did we clean the place. We cleaned the place up. Very tasty, very beautifully presented. So, all right, is there anybody else who we have to say a nice word about? What? Your granddaughter got engaged. Mrs. Fachler's granddaughter. This is a South African granddaughter. They're now in London. A Netanya granddaughter. Right, that's terribly important. Mazel tov to you. You should have a lot of nachas and simcha, and everybody here. I think one of these days we're going to reach the point where we're going to have to put out a monthly bulletin listing all of the simchas, and so in this family of ours should get to know each other better. Okay, that's it. So it's a first day, and I always in slichas in the morning, it always reminds me the first slicha in davening today tells us that there were 3 terrible things that happened in the month of Tevet, the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th. The 8th was the translation of Torah into Greek that was forced upon the Jewish people. The 9th was the passing of Ezra HaSofer. Ezra died, yesterday was the yahrzeit of Ezra. And today, of course, is Asar B'Tevet, which was the beginning of the siege of Yerushalayim at the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, the beginning of the siege, and then it took 3 years until the city was captured. And here in modern day Eretz Yisrael, it has become known as the Yom HaKadosh HaKlali, the day on which people say Kaddish for those who, family members that were lost in the Shoah, that we don't really know when the yahrzeit or when the date was, and there are shuls in which simply everybody says Kaddish to the Yom HaKadosh HaKlali. Okay. Alright, this morning we're going to use a pasuk in the Sedra in order to take off on a journey. I think it's going to be an interesting journey. I hope it is. And listen, you have really no choice. This is what I decided to do this morning. That's all. In Parashat Vayechi, which is the last Sedra in Sefer Reshit, it's the end of the life of Yaakov Avinu, and Yaakov, before he passes on, Yaakov Avinu blesses his children. That Revi, chapter 49, Vayikra Yaakov El Bonov, Yaakov called to his children, Vayomer, and he said, Hey, Osfu, Gavav, Agidolachem, et Hashem, Yikra, et Kem, Bachalit, Ayomim, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen with you in the end of days. He called to Vishimu, gather around and listen, sons of Yaakov, listen, El Yisrael, Avichem, to your father Yisrael. Then he goes through the tribes and he makes a statement about each one of them. Some of them he speaks to them very sharply. When we say that these are brachot, that these are blessings, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are all blessings. In other words, he's going to tell them something that they need to know, and of course Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are really scolded by Yaakov. I want to deal with one pasuk with regard to Yehuda. It's in chapter 49. It's pasuk 10. Lo yosur shevet mi Yehuda umechokek mi bein raglov ad ki yavo shilo velo yikahat amim. That pasuk. That's it. Lo yosur shevet mi Yehuda. The scepter shall not be removed from Yehuda. The shevet, the scepter, represents power to rule. What Yaakov Avinu is doing here is he is giving Yehuda Malchus, kingdom, the royal house of the Jewish people will come from Yehuda. That means he's passing over Reuven and Shimon and Levi. And in fact, in last week's Sedra, there was the struggle between Yehuda and Yosef. Yosef is also removed from the running, and the decision is made by Yaakov Avinu, the one who is going to rule the royal house of Klal Yisrael, which ultimately is going to be Malchut Beit David, the royal house of David, is going to come, therefore, from the tribe of Yehuda. And here is the pasuk which establishes it. Lo yosur shevet mi Yehuda. The shevet, the scepter of rule, shall not be removed from Yehuda. Umichokek mi bein raglav. And the lawgiver, the makers of the statutes, will come from between the feet of Yehuda. Later on, even the presidents of the Sanhedrin are also going to be from the house of Yehuda. Leadership by the Jewish people is from the house of Yehuda in general, and Malchut Beit David in particular. Ad ki yavo Shiloh, until he will come to Shiloh, or until Shiloh comes. There are a number of pshatim in this pasuk. Rashi learns until Shiloh comes. The one to whom kingdom belongs. Who is Shiloh? Shiloh is Mashiach ben David. The ultimate end, or the beginning, of Jewish history. The low, and to him, this Shiloh, Mashiach, who's called Shiloh, to him there will be a gathering of nations. All nations of the world will gather around him. All right, so here is the passage that we're going to deal with. And what we're going to deal with is, really, I'll just tell you at the outset what we're going to deal with. The sheets that you have in front of you, you know, of course, that the front side is the one that says JCA on it, or my name, you understand, down at the bottom. Sometimes it's at the top. The very bottom of the page, Shuvat Ta'amei HaMinhagim. There is a sefer called Ta'amei HaMinhagim. There is a sefer that gives the reasons for all sorts of customs. And there's a wide range of information that appears in this sefer Ta'amei HaMinhagim. And there's one sentence toward the end of Ta'amei HaMinhagim that we're going to deal with today. Because it's related to this pasuk, it's related to a lot of other things, but certainly everything flows from this pasuk. Ta'amei HaMinhagim says the following. Let's read. The Sefer Ta'amei HaMinhagim Muvah, in Sefer Ta'amei HaMinhagim it's brought, Tam, Sheneschanek alon Nizkar Klal the Mishnah, Lefi Sherabbeinu HaKadosh, Mesader HaMishnah, Hanukkah, you know, we just last week finished Hanukkah. There is no Mishnah in the Mishnaic literature. There's hardly any mention of Hanukkah. Here the Ta'amei HaMinhagim says there is no mention. For example, all the laws of Purim, there's an entire Gemara called Masechet Megillah, which describes all of the laws of Purim. There is no Masechet, there is no tractate of the Talmud that tells us the laws of Hanukkah. So the Ta'amei HaMinhagim says, you know why? Because who was the one that composed and authored the Mishnah? It was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rabbi Yehuda the Prince, in approximately the year 200. He was from the house of David. He was a descendant of the house of David. He was the seventh generation from Hillel. Hillel was from the house of David. The Nes Chanukah Nasa, and he goes on to say the miracle of Chanukah was done al yedei Beit HaChashmonaim. It was done by the Chashmonaim that were Kohanim Shetofsu Hamucha. They were the ones who grabbed the kingdom. They were not from the seed of David. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, our sainted Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, didn't like that. When he wrote the Mishnah with a divine spirit in him, Nishmat Hanes Michiburo, the miracle of Hanukkah was removed, or it just fell by the wayside from his great magnum opus, the Mishnah. That's the statement of the Ta'amei HaMinhagim. I'll even let you in what the end of the shiur is going to be, if I don't get it all said before when time is up. We can't under any circumstances accept this to be true. It's just impossible. And we're going to show why. Listen, if you tell me about modern day political leaders or aspirants that they have all sorts of personal interests in mind, this one doesn't like that one, and that one doesn't like this one, and there's an old score between this one and that one, and there are those who are upset about, you know, some newcomer comes here 10 years ago in Olei Chadash, and he wants to take over the country and walks off with the party, or people who have all sorts of personal interests. So I can understand that in terms of modern day politics. It most probably was always like that. But we're talking about Rabbeinu, and notice even how he's referred to, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Rabbeinu HaKadosh. To say that Rabbeinu HaKadosh was upset with Hanukkah. How do you like that? He didn't like Hanukkah. And because he didn't like Hanukkah, I'm going to show those Chashmonaim, they're not going to be in the Mishnah. It's so ridiculous, but we're going to prove. We're going to prove why it's ridiculous, how ridiculous it is, and how unacceptable it is. And then we're also going to have to explain, well, why indeed is there no Mishnah that deals with Hanukkah? I mean, this is a mystery. We have to deal with that as well. So we're going to begin with, on that same sheet, the Ramban, and Lo Yosor Shevet Miyehuda. It looks like a formidable Ramban. Don't let it frighten you. Because we'll learn part of it, and then we're going to go to the underlined sections. Lo Yosor Shevet Miyehuda. Rule shall not be removed from Yehuda. Ein in yano shelo yosor la'olam. It doesn't mean, you see, first of all, he has to explain the pasuk. The pasuk doesn't mean that there will never be a period without rule of the house of Yehuda. We know in history that there have been many periods of that sort. So what did Yaakov mean when he said to Yehuda that rule shall not be removed from Yehuda? I mean, we 2,000 years have gone by now without any rule from the house of Yehuda. There was no rule from the house of Yehuda during the entire period of the second Bet HaMikdash. There's something else that we're going to have to deal with. The first king who arose over Israel was not from the house of Yehuda. The first king who arose over Israel was Shaul from the tribe of Binyamin. So what does the Pasuk mean when it says, Lo Yosor Shevet Mi Yehuda, the scepter of rule shall not be removed from Yehuda? So he says, Ein Inyano, it doesn't mean Shalom Yosor Lo'olam, that it will never be removed. Ki Katur, because in fact it says in Sefer Devarim, it says one of the curses that will come about upon the Jewish people is Yolech Hashem Otcha Bet Malkecha Shetakim Alecha. God is going to lead you and your king who you have appointed over you, El Goy Ashelo Yodata Atal Avitecha, you're going to be taken off into exile to a nation that you and your fathers didn't know. V'neheim U'malkam Bakola. So Torah itself says that there's going to be a time when the Jewish people and their king will be in exile. Ein lehem od melech v'sachim, so there's no longer a king and officers. And Pasuk says, V'yamim rabim ein melech v'yisrael. Pasuk a number of times in Shoftim, in Tanakh, many years that there was no king over Israel. V'hanovi lo yaftiach et Yisrael shelo yelchu bashevi b'shum inyon b'abur shim lo chaleim Yehudah. No prophet ever promised the Jewish people that you're not going to go in exile because there has to be a king over you from the house of Yehuda. So we can't let you go into exile, because in exile there won't be a king from the house of Yehuda. There's no such thing. Avolim Yono. So what does this pasuk mean? What was Yaakov telling his children? Shelo Yosor Shevet Mi Yehuda El Echod Mi Echov. When there will be kingdom, it will not be from one of the other tribes. It will not be removed from Yehuda to one of his brothers. Ki malchut Yisrael hamoshel haleihem mimena yu, because the kingdom of Israel, the one who rules of them, will be from the tribe of Yehuda. V'lo yimshol echad me echav alav, and none of his brothers will rule over him. V'chein, and so to the second part of the pasuk, lo yosur mechokeit mibein raglov, a rule, a lawmaker shall not be removed from him. Shekol mechokeit b'Yisrael, asher b'yado tabat hamelech mimenu yiyu, any legislator who has the king, the stamp of kingdom, will be from him. Ki hu yimshol, the house of Yehuda is going to rule. V'yitzaveh b'chol Yisrael, he will command all of Israel. For lo chotam hamalchut, and he has the signet, the seal of royalty. Ad ki yavo b'no, until his son will come. V'lo yikat kol ha'amim, to whom will be a gathering of all of the nations of the world. La'asod bakol kiritzano, everybody is going to do his will. V'zehu ha-Mashiach. That is Mashiach. All right? Let's go a few lines further. I'll tell you exactly how many lines. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seventh line. There's a little space there. The number 96. V'amar lo Yosor, lirmos ki yim lo shevet acher al Yisrael. When he says lo Yosor, it will not be removed. This is a hint that there is going to be another
tribe that will rule. You see, lo yosa means it should not be removed. Now, there are other ways in which it could have been said. There shall be no king except from Yehuda. Lo yosa means that there may be another king before, but when the scepter of royalty is going to come to Yehuda, from then on and further it cannot be removed. So therefore he says, Lo yosa, lirmoz, this comes to hint to the idea, ki yim lo shevet achar yisrael, that another tribe is going to rule over Israel, avon me eit shi yochel li yot li Yehuda shevet malchus, from the time that Yehuda is going to have the rule of law, lo yosa mimenu al shevet achar, it's not going to be removed to another tribe. Okay? The end of the next line, v'inyon sha'ul, hayaki ba'avur, how did Shaul, who was from the house of Binyamin, become the first king? So the fact is that his kingdom was planned to be a temporary one. And the reason why he was appointed, because God was upset with the Jewish people who asked for a king at a time that was not right, and a way that was not right. So, but he acquiesced to their request, but he gave them a king who would perforce be of a temporary nature, and that was Shaul. Ki barabur shedvar sheilat ha-malchut ba'itahi, the timing. What do they always say around here? It gets me upset, but over here it's correct. The itui wasn't correct. I don't think the itui is ever correct for anything over here. But when the Rambam says, as far as God is concerned, that the Itui, they had Shmuel. Shmuel was a Navi, was accepted by all of Israel, and he was victorious. He led Jews to victory. What did they need a king then? What did they need a king? So therefore, since it was the request, the timing of the request, and the way in which requested was wrong, and therefore, lo rotzol hamlech aleihem min hashevet hashelo hamalchut, God didn't want to appoint a king then from the tribe to whom kingdom belongs forever, because he wanted something of a temporary nature. He would not be able to take it away. Shelo yosef imenu olamin v'nasam lahem malchus shos, he gave them a kingdom of a temporary nature. L'zer ramaz hakosim, there's a pasuk that says, atem lechom melech ba'api, I'll give you a king with my anger, and I will take him away with my wrath. There are times when you get something like, okay, you want a king? Here, have your king. Nasnulo shalom ritzona, God gave it with, it was not his will. And the Ramban goes on to explain, because they had Shmuel. Okay, let's go to the part of the Ramban that's underlined, the first one. Olafita ati. What about all the kings who ruled over the 10 tribes? Those were kings over Israel. Says the Ramban that they transgressed the words of their elder, their father Yaakov. Yes, it was wrong. The kings who ruled over Israel from the other tribes after David, over him al tat aviyem, umavidim nakwa, vehem aru somkim otvar achia shilomi anovi shemashach liyerovam. Now the fact is that Yerovam ben Nevat, who rebelled, the first one, first king of Israel, had been promised by the prophet Achia from Shiloh, Achia HaShilomi, that he will be king. So he was an exception, but after him, kingdom should have returned to Yehuda. The next underlined part of the Ramban. V'zeh ha'yonesh ha'kashmonoyim shemalchu b'bayit sheni. The Ramban here says that's why the chashmonoyim who ruled during the second Bet Hamikdash, they sinned. Ki hoyu chasidei elyon, they were exceptional, outstandingly pious people. If not for them, Torah and mitzvahs would have been forgotten from Israel. despite the fact that they were so pious, despite the fact that they saved Torah by the Jewish people, they were punished onesh gadol, a great punishment. Ki arba b'nei chashmonoi hazakein hachasidim hamolchim zeh hazeh im kol gevuratam v'hatzlachatam naflu b'yada yaveim becharev. Four of the sons of the old elder chashmonoi, Mate Yochanan, Ben Matityahu, who were indeed pious people and who ruled one after another, despite all of their strength and their success, all of them fell by the sword in the hand of the enemy. V'higia ha'onesh b'sof, the punishment at the end was that which our rabbi said, kol man da'oma mi'beit chashmonoi ka'atina avdom. The Gemara says, in the end, Gemara says, ultimately, anybody who comes and claims that he's from the royal house of the Chashmonaim, you can be absolutely certain that he is a slave. Because nobody of the original family of the Chashmonaim survived. The ones who took over the kingdom toward the end, whether it was Agrippus or Herder's Herod, they were slaves of the house of Chashmonaim. So, we're talking about a family that is completely wiped out, despite the fact that they were Chassidei Elyon, they were very pious, and despite the fact that if not for them, Torah would have been forgotten by Israel. All right, I think that's enough of this Ramban. So the Ramban makes it very clear that when Yaakov says in the Seder, Lo Yosor Shevet Mi Yehuda, the staff shall not be removed from Yehuda, this is a condemnation of the house of Chashmonai. It's a condemnation of the house of Chashmonai, then of course we can understand the cryptic statement that is made down at the bottom by the Tamei Hamin Hagim, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was upset with the house of the Chashmonaim because they took the kingdom that really belonged to his family, even though Tamei Hamin Hagim is saying something a little different. He's making it a great deal more personal. You know, my family, I'm from the house of David, and they removed took the kingdom. So therefore, he was upset with Hanukkah, and that's it. No Hanukkah mentioned in the Mishnah. All right, but that's not the whole story. I was afraid somebody would ask me. She asked, who wrote the Tamei Hamin Hagim? So of all things, I wasn't able to find my copy of the Tamei Hamin Hagim yesterday. So it was sort of somebody in the last... No, I'm not going to say anything. Let's save it. Okay? It's not going to make a difference, but we'll save it. And there are all sorts of things that were added into the Tamei Hamin Hagim. It had to be recent because there are even those who claim that this sentence in the Tamei Hamin Hagim has its source in the Chatam Sofer. So we're talking about the last 150, 200 years. By the way, there is no source in the Chatam Sofer that says anything of the sort. So we're talking about 150 years. Okay, but it's not a historic statement. Let's take a look on the left-hand side of the page. Let's take a look at the Rambam. What does the Rambam? Famous Rambam. The Bayit Sheni, during the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, Kishe Malchu Yavam, when Greece ruled, the Gazru Gezerot HaYisrael, they decreed against Israel, Ubatlu Dasam, and they tried to remove their religion. They didn't let Jews study Torah or do mitzvahs. It was a terrible, terrible period of time. They stretched out their hands to take the wealth from the Jewish people and their daughters. It was a terrible, terrible period of time. They went into the temple and they made breaches in the walls, v'timu hataharot, and they went and they defiled that which was pure. V'tzar lahem liyisrael ma'od mipineihem, and Jews were extremely oppressed from before them. V'ulechatzum lachatz gadol, and they placed great pressures upon them. Until the God of our fathers had mercy upon them, and saved them from their hands, we healed them and rescued them, The Gavru Bnei Chashmenoi HaKohanim HaGedolim, the sons of the Chashmenoi, the high priest, their hand was stronger, Vaharogum, and they killed them, Vahushiyu Yisrael Yodam, and saved Israel from the hands of the Greeks, Vahamidu Melech Min HaKohanim, and they appointed a king from the Kohanim, the Chosra Malchut Li Yisrael Yeter Amatayim Shana Ara Kurban Hasheni. And royalty returned to the house, to Israel, for more than 200 years until the second Beth HaMikdash. As this sentence is written in the Rambam, does the Rambam seem to be condemning them, or is the Rambam writing about the great accomplishment of the house of Chashmenoi? Kingdom, royalty, returned to the Jewish people for more than 200 years. The Rambam obviously finds absolutely no fault with the house of Chashmenoi for the fact that they assumed the throne of royalty. So we have over here a machloket between the Rambam and the Rambam. Now, of course, as we look at the Rambam, then we're going to have a great deal of difficulty understanding the statement of the Tamei Amin Hakim. Rambam finds no fault with it. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi finds fault with it. Why does Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi find fault with it? It seems that there was nothing wrong with the Chashmonaim taking over the kingdom. Alright. We'll learn the next halachu, Kishagavu Yisrael Aloyavim, and when Israel waxed strong over their enemies, Ve'ivdom, and destroyed them, it was the 25th day B'chav Hei B'chadesh Kislev Haya. The Nichnasul Hechal, they went into the temple below Matsu, Shem, and Torah. They didn't find any pure oil. But Mikdash Elapach Echad, only one jar, below Hoyabola Habak Elayon Echad Dovad, and it had enough to burn for only one day. And they lit the candles for 8 days. Achekotshu Zaitin Otsiu Shem and Torah, until they were able to beat the olives and make lua. Okay. So here we have Ramban on one side, and we're not finished with the Ramban yet, and we have the Ramban on the other side. Below the Rambam, I bring there those psukim are in Sefer Daniel. And what we're interested in, most of all, not as much the psukim, but we'll read one or two of the psukim, as to hear what Rashi has to say. Pasuk 20, Vo'amad al kano ma'avir noges. I'm going to get a good translation of this. That's chapter 11. Chapter 11. Okay. There will arise in his place, Vo'amad al kano, to stand on a base, there will arise in his place one whose glory of kingship is the passing through of the tax done. You know what? I don't understand the English translation over there. I'm not even going to tell you where I took it from. I don't know what it is. Well, it's no. Ma'vir noges. Noges is the oppressor. Ma'avir Noges is the one who removes the oppressor. There will be established one who will remove the oppressor. Heder Malchut, and he's going to have the beauty, the majesty of kingdom. Ubiyonim Achodim Yishaver. However, after a relatively brief period of time, he will be broken. V'lo ba'apayim, v'lo b'milchama, not through anger and not through war. Says Rashi on this pasuk. Pasuk 20. Vo'amad al kano ma'avir noges, v'yitchazek al besiso b'har hamoda'it. And he will be strong on his base. B'har hamoda'it. Mount Modi'in. Who? Matityahu ben Yochanan. Matityahu, the son of Yochanan, ha-ma'avir noges, Yovam me'am Yisrael, who removes the the taskmaster, the oppressor of Greece from upon Israel, who had their malchut, be Israel. And his will be the beauty of kingdom in Israel. And it can also mean that he will return kingdom to Israel. Kisar v'gibor yeh, because he is going to be an officer and a mighty one. Who the whole Zaroachra of B'nai HaChashmonaim. He and his, all his children afterwards, the sons of the Hashmonaim. You understand, Daniel, 150 years before the period of the Hashmonaim, is prophesying that there's going to arise a great and mighty man over the house of the Hashmonaim who is going to remove the oppressor from Israel and is going to assume the throne. Rashi sees this, therefore, in the prophecy of Daniel. Obviously, Rashi seems to be learning that the establishment of the kingdom of the Hashmonaim was something of a positive nature, not something to be condemned. Ubiyonim achodim yishoveh, biyonim ni mu'otim tishoveh malchutam, v'lo v'apayim shel umacheret, and in a brief period of time, the kingdom is going to fall. By brief period of time, of course, what he means is brief in terms of a longer view of history. It will last for 70, 80, 100 years. The Rambam says 200, he's counting the whole period of the Hashmonaim. But even if it's 200 years, that's a very brief period of time in terms of Jewish history. But the truth is they didn't last that long. And he says, Lo va'apayim shaluma acheret, it's not the anger of another nation that's going to bring them down. V'lo b'milchoman, it's not going to be war from an outside source. What Daniel says is they're going to destroy themselves. And that's exactly what happened. It was an internal struggle. It was an internal struggle between the two last remaining sons of the house of Hashmonai, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. V'lo b'milchoma ki mehem ubahem, ashi yikanu Aristobulus for Hyrcanus al tavaram lucha. Hyrcanus and Aristobulus fought for the kingdom, and because they fought for the kingdom, they brought it all down. Now, later on, there's going to be the next few psukim are really going to describe the rise of Rome. They invited Rome into Eretz Yisrael in order to, in a sense, referee between them. And what happens is, it begins with some kind of a peace agreement and a treaty with Rome, and ultimately Rome doesn't keep its commitment, violates the agreement, and destroys Israel in its entirety. Rashi says it right here. This is not a personal political statement. You know that I never do anything of the sort. I only learn Torah. And Rashi says that this is from, he sees it in Daniel. And he says, V'amad al kano nivzeh. You know who's now going to stand on this base? The base upon which the Hashmonaim stood? Their kingdom? Nivzeh. Somebody who's a shameful person. And he's referring to the house of Esav, Edom, Rome. V'lo notnu alav hod malchut. The glory of kingdom doesn't belong to them. Uba b'shalva. He came in tranquility. He came peacefully. Behechazik malchut, and then he grabbed hold of the kingdom, behalak lakot, with a sweet tongue. He spoke peace. What is it?
Flattery?
No, not flattery. What did they say? The Indians used to say the white man talks with a forked tongue, A forked tongue. You talk peace, and you mean war. You talk accommodation, and what you really mean is...
What they did,
hafrei
umshol.
Yes, they... Kitzayit befiv. Kitzayit, very good. Kitzayit befiv. That's Esav. Esav uses words as weapons. So he originally came b'shalva, in peace. The fact is that Rome was invited into Eretz Yisrael. Alright, all of this is... it's all there in Rashi. And how they're going to, the mighty people of the house of the Hashmonai are going to be removed completely. And who's going to do it? It's going to be done by Rome. All right. Enough of that. So now we have a problem. But the problem is going to deepen. If you turn your pages over, this is another Ramban. We're now going to temper the words of the Ramban. This is a famous Ramban. By the way, the two Rambans we're learning today are really famous Rambans. If you didn't know before, you can now join, you know, all of those people who for years, these Rambans are should be well known. There's a Ramban at the beginning of Parashat Bahalotcha in Sefer Bamidbar. Bahalotcha Taneirot, when you light the menorah, the end of Parashat Nasal was the dedication of the Mishkan. Each one of the tribes had brought special sacrifices. There were 12, 13 days of dedication. And that ends Parashat Nasal, and then beginning of Parashat Bahalotcha is the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. Says the Ramban at the beginning, he brings Rashi, Lomo Nisbecha Parashat Menorah L'Chanukat HaNasiim. Why is the parasha of the menorah right, the parasha of lighting the candelabra in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, why does that come immediately after the dedication of the princes? L'fi Kishera Aaron Chanukat HaNasiim, when Aaron saw the dedication, 12, 13 days in a row, the heads of the tribes are bringing sacrifices, Chol Shadato, he felt faint, he felt weak. Shelo hoya imahem b'chanukah lo hu v'lo shiftot, that neither he nor his tribe were involved in the dedication ceremonies. Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, Chayef, I swear, shelecho gedolo mishalhem, your share is greater than theirs, shatom madliku meitivet hanedo the book of Erev, because you are the one who's going to light and prepare the candles every morning and every evening. Lishon Rashi, mi medrash akoda. This is what Rashi says, and it comes from the medrash. The Ramban is a little bit, finds difficulty with the words of Rashi. Why? If Aaron feels bad that he's not part of the dedication ceremonies, so why does God tell him, well, you know, you're going to light the candles in the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash every day? Is that all that he's going to do? He and his children are going to do all of the sacrifices, day in, day out, as long as there will be a Mikdash and a Beit HaMikdash. Only the children of Aaron are going to be able to go into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur. Only they can do all that work. Only they can bring the Korban Tomid in the morning and the evening. The Korbanot Musaf, the Korban Ha'omer, the Kisiat Zedek, the Lechem Afanim. There's so much. Everything is going to be Aaron. So if Aaron feels badly, if God tells him, listen, you're going to light the menorah. What do you mean you're going to light the menorah? You're going to do everything. Therefore the Ramban says, and he's going to bring proof from the Medrash. Look at the where it's underlined. Aval inyan ha-hagada hazu lidrosh nemez min ha-parsha. Do you know what this whole bahalotcha, this whole mitzvah of lighting the menorah is all about? It is an indication, a hint. From this parasha, al Chanukah shel Neidot, shahita b'bayit sheni, about the dedication of the menorah that took place at the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, ayidei Aaron u'bonav, through Aaron and his children. Ritzoni lomar, you know what I mean? Chashbonoi kohen gadol u'bonav. Do you understand what the Ramban is saying? The Ramban is saying that God has promised Aaron that there's going to be a great period of time in which the children of Aaron, Chashmenoi Ubarav, are going to light the menorah. You understand? The Torah itself, it's already being said in Torah that this is going to happen. Ubalashon Hazem et Satiyah the Megillat Stadim, and I found it in a medrash called Megillat Stadim, L'Rabbeinu Nisim, Shehizkir Agabazu, he mentioned this medrash, V'Amar, and he says the following, quote, Ra'isi b'medrash, I saw in the medrash Kibesh, Yikrivu Shnei Masashvotim, when the 12 tribes brought their sacrifices in the Mishkan, in the desert, in Parashat Nasal, Velohikiv Shevet Levi, and the tribe of Levi didn't bring, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lakat HaNeirot, where their candles will be lit, V'ani Oseh Bo LeYisrael Ayedei Bonecha, Nisim U'Tshua, V'Chanukah Shekruya Al Shemam. You should know that there's going to be a period of time during which I'm going to bring great miracles and salvation and a dedication that's going to be called on the name of the family of Aaron. That's the dedication of the sons of the Chashmonai. Ulefichach, therefore, hismich parashat zu the parashat Chanukah Hamazbeach. That's why parashat Ba'alotcha follows parashat Nasa. And the Rambam is going to go on to explain that why is this singled out as the reward for Aaron? Because it's really one of the few things that we do even when there's no Bet HaMikdash. In other words, Aaron is being told that your schut, your merit is going to be that great that even when there's no Bet HaMikdash, but the Chanukah menorah is going to be lit. So that's a greater schus than anything else, even when there is no Bet HaMikdash. So that you're not making korbanos in the morning and in the evening. What's very fascinating is, in the middle of Parashat Naso, right before the dedication ceremonies of the Bet of the Mishkan, is the Parsha of Birchat Kohanim, Duchenim. Which means, therefore, the dedication ceremonies of the Mishkan are surrounded on two sides, like quotation marks, by the two mitzvahs that we will continue to fulfill even when there is no Bet HaMikdash. The Kohanim that Duchen every day on one hand, and Jews that are going to light the Chanukah menorah on the other hand. Alright? So what do we have over here now? We now have a Ramban. We have a Ramban who seems to be contradicting himself. On the one hand, he says the terrible punishment that befell the house of Chashmonai because they had taken something which was not theirs kingdom. And then on the other hand, we find that God Himself is the one who promises that this great schus is going to come through the house of the Chashmonai. Are the Chashmonai good or not? Tamei and Hagim says that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi didn't want to make a section of the Talmud about Chanukah because he was from the house of Yehuda, from the house of God. So I think time has come. We only have about 20 minutes or so to understand what's happening over here. Sorry, we'll take care of it. The end is going to be that we must reject the words of the Tamei Menhagim completely and totally. That's going to be the end. There is no such thing as personal considerations that enter into Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's decision what's going to be in the Mishnah and what's not. First of all, because Rabbeinu is called Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He was the seventh generation from Hillel. And by the way, if he's the seventh generation from Hillel, who is the one that established the very special mitzvah of Hanukkah? That Moseh V'Holeh, who's the one that says you one candle one night, two the next night, three the night after? That's Hillel! The Zayda of seven generations earlier. Hanukkah was good enough for Hillel, it's not good enough for his seventh generation grandchild. If the house of David was upset with the Chashmonaim, then Hillel should have downplayed the whole story of Hanukkah. In addition to the fact that there are about seven or eight references in the Mishnah, there are Mishnayot sprinkled, peppered throughout Mishnah, where Hanukkah is indeed mentioned. There's one in the Masechet Rosh Hashanah, where it says that they, before the month of Kislev, they would notify from Yerushalayim, at the beginning of the month of Kislev, they would notify the entire Golah when Rosh Chodesh took place, so Jews throughout the world should know when to celebrate Hanukkah. That was in the Mishnah. And then simply, if one knows what Rabbeinu HaKadosh was, so first of all, from a technical point of view, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, did not write the Mishnah himself. He gathered together, no, he gathered together all the Chachmei Yisrael of his time. He was an extremely wealthy man, so he was able to afford it. He brought together all the wisest people of his time, and as a team, they put together the Mishnah. The Mishnah was a team effort, but the one who was in charge, the one who placed his stamp and his imprimatur upon the Mishnah was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. The Rambam writes about him. I was going to give this out to you, but it would be too much.
The Rambam writes in his introduction to the Mishnah Torah, as he goes from generation to generation, Moshe, Kibel Torah, and Sinai, from to Yeshua, to the Zakenim, to the Nevi'im, to the men of the Great Assembly, and who was the last of the men of the Great Assembly, Rav Shimon HaTzadik. And then it says, after Shimon HaTzadik, who does he mention as the next great giant? When it came to the time of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rav Yehuda Hanasi, he was the most unusual one in his generation, in his time. The person in whose all delights and all of the best character and personality traits were in that man. He had the merit that the people of his generation called him Rabbeinu HaKadosh, our holy rabbi. Nobody else was called that. Ushmo, you know what his real name? Anybody know what his name was? Yehuda. He was wise to the nth degree, as they said, Miyamot Moshe v'ad Rebbe, from the days of Moshe until Rebbe, lo ra'inu toro u'gedula b'makam ha'echad. Torah and greatness, worldly greatness, you don't find in one person from Moshe until Rebbe. So you're going to tell me that this Rebbe, who has all of the great characteristics of sanctity and holiness, so you know, some kind of a has a problem. He didn't like the Chashmonai, I understand. So he just could wipe them out. No Hanukkah. It can't be. I mean, what's unfortunate, of course, is that even into our svarim there are things that can enter that you have to be very careful with. It means sometimes, you know, danger, you have to be careful, things have to be thought out, you have to look at them. Believe me, if I said some little bits of this year, you think I didn't have people who tried to come to the defense of the Talim and Hagim. It was a mistake, somebody put it in, I don't know, you know, printers, you can always blame things on printers. Printers, politicians, they're the ones that mess everything up. So it may have been. Furthermore, and by the way, a lot of this information was collected in an article that was written by Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he brings, fascinatingly enough, he brings in a footnote. It's amazing that he knew this. He brings in a footnote from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. There's a whole approach that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky had in which he wrote, and there are many proofs to it. He brings many proofs that the people who established the Second Commonwealth, built the Second Beth HaMikdash, knew that it wasn't going to last. They knew that it was going to last. They knew that it wasn't going to last because the Shekhinah did not dwell in the same way in the second Beth HaMikdash as it did in the first. Therefore, they wanted to make certain, our rabbis wanted to make certain, that Jews do not fall into error and think that this is the Geula Shleima, this is it. The millennia has begun. This is it. This is the great redemption of the Jewish people. And for that reason, he says, and this is a Ramban. The Ramban says that the names of the months came up with them from Babel. Now the fact is, it's very strange. When they come back after Bayit Sheni, all of a sudden you start having Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Ab. Tammuz, by the way, is the name of a Persian deity. Tammuz, Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev. What was wrong? What was wrong with the way how were they counting the months before that? They most probably, the months were identified as the first month. Chodesh Rishon, Chodesh Sheni. Right? Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni. They didn't use Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Shmot HaChadoshim, the names of the months came up with them from Babel. And the fact is that many of them retained Babylonian names. We don't name our children with the names that they gave. I mean, in the Talmud there are so many Babylonian names, and the Babylonian names I tell you, I have not yet met anybody who called their children Hyrcanus or Aristobulus. All right? Or Hyrcanus or Agrippus. It's a good name for a street, but it's not a name for any Jewish kid. And there's so many, you go through the Talmud, you can find so many names that are simply not used by a Sukh. Rabbi Yankov says that this was also part of a sense of exile in Eretz Yisrael, so that people should not make the mistake of thinking that this is it, we finally made it. Not so. And as part of this, he says, it was calculated and planned that there should not be a king from the house of David. Because a king from the house of David would have left the mistaken impression with the Jewish people that this is it. We have a Beis HaMikdash, we have Yerushalayim, and now we have already Malchus Beis David. This is it. Would they have thought that? Then of course, when the illusion is shattered afterwards, it would be destructive in a way that would simply cause a loss of faith by the Jewish people. So therefore, it was calculated and planned that there should not be a Malchus Beis David during the period of the second Beit HaMikdash. More than that, even if we are to accept that the Ramban in this week's Sefer, the Lo Yosor Shevet Yehuda Ramban, is correct, that a terrible punishment came upon the house of the Chashmonaim because they transgressed the words of that Zakein, they transgressed the words of Yaakov. Yaakov said, Lo Yosor Shevet Yehuda, you can't remove it, and they did it, and therefore they were punished. I mean, there could be other reasons why the house of Chashmonaim fell. I mean, Rashi said the reason why the house of the Chashmonaim fell. It fell from within. Daniel had already prophesied that they were going to fall from within. They were going to be the cause of their own destruction. The civil war between Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, that really brought it about. The civil war and the fact that they brought Rome to referee, that's what brought it down. But it means so even according to the Ramban, what we have to take a look at is the historic perspective. The fact is that the kingdom of Chashmonaim was not established until 40, 50 or more years after Hanukkah, which means that whatever is done later does not affect the original Ness and the Chashmonaim. They never accepted upon themselves kingdom. On the contrary, one takes a look in the Megillat Antiochus that was written, the Megillah of Hanukkah. There is a Megillah of Hanukkah. And it was written by Gedolei Yisrael to commemorate the miracle. Never are any of the Chashmonaim referred to as Melech. And they were careful themselves to refer to themselves only as Nasi, as President, nothing more. It was only the later generation. So why should that retroactively affect the way Rabbi Yehuda Anasi looked at Hanukkah? The miracle of Hanukkah is a miracle. The B'nai Chashmonai were the instrument of God in order to bring about that great miracle. They never transgressed the wishes of Yaakov Avinu that kingdom remain with the house of David. So therefore, how can Tameim and Hagim say that because later Chashmonaim or the end of the house of Chashmonai took to themselves the title of king, therefore Rabbi Yehuda Anasi gets upset with Hanukkah? It doesn't work. Yes? Furthermore, this is also an extremely important historic comment that has to be made, terribly important. It took till Rabbi Yehuda Anasi nearly until Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law, was put down in writing. There had been a prohibition. There's a Torah Shebichtav, there's the written Torah, and then there is the oral Torah, Torah Sheba'al Peh. By right, and traditionally, philosophically, theologically, this is what God wanted, that the oral law should be transmitted orally. In the first instance, father to son, father should be the Rebbe who teaches his son. When fathers were no longer able to do it, and in the period of the second Beit HaMikdash, there was a man called Yehoshua ben Gamla, who went ahead and established the first school system because parents were falling down on the job, and therefore he set up a system of schools where there were teachers who taught children. It was still, the intent was that it should be orally. The reason why such was the intent from Sinai and further, because Torah has to be taught by virtue of this interpersonal relationship. Torah is not just another thing that, you know, you put it on your what do you call those things, computers, huh? You know, it's there, and you learn from the computer, you need a Rebbe. You need a Rebbe. You need a personal touch. You need somebody who's going to teach you how to learn. You have to learn from it. Yeshayahu says, your eyes should see your Rebbe. You have to see a personality, a Torah personality before you who teaches you Torah. That's the way God wanted the Torah should be transmitted. But then there came a period of time already where, because of the Tzavos and Milchamos and Jews wandering, they were beginning to lose touch with Torah Shebaal Peh. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is the one who made the decision. Eight lasot Lashem, there's a time to do for God. Hey, feilu Torotecha, you simply have to. That halacha has to be set aside. And they wrote the Mishnah. By the way, the fact is that the halacha was never set aside, because even when he wrote the Mishnah, if you didn't have a Rebbe, you wouldn't understand the Mishnah. And 300 years when they wrote, Ravina Nirvashi wrote the Gemara, if you don't have a Rebbe, you don't understand the Gemara. And 2,000 years later, with all due respect, Artscroll did an excellent job with Artscroll, with Steinsaltz, and with your dial a daf or whatever else. Anybody who wants to be a Talmud Chacham, I mean, you can pick up information, there's no question about it, you can pick up a great deal of information. A Talmud Chacham can only come by coming in contact with a Rebbe. You need a Rebbe. Torah Shebaal Peh has always retained the oralness of it all, that it requires a Rebbe. Only great Rebbeim created great Talmud Chacham. You can have all the tools and all of the aids, and they are only tools. They're no more than that. Whether it be the computer, or it be art scroll, or all of the other things, they are aids and tools. Nothing more than that. Anybody who thinks that they're going to become a Tzadkreis and Talmud Chacham, I'm afraid to say it's not so. You need a Rebbe. You need a Rebbe. So that the character of Torah Shebaal Peh always remained. But even before Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi wrote the Mishnah, the very first thing that was written was a document called Megillat Ta'anit. Megillat Ta'anit. The Gemara mentions it in many places. There are copies extant of the Megillat Ta'anit. It has been reprinted. In Talmud there are sections of Megillat Ta'anit, this Megillah of fast days. The truth is, it wasn't a Megillah of fast days. You know what it was? It was a Megillah of days on which we don't fast. Whenever, there were difficult times during the second Beit HaMikdash, when there was some kind of a decree, and then the decree passed from the world, they made a Yontif. And there was a whole list of days on which you didn't say Tachnun, you didn't make eulogies, Hespedim, and this whole list was in Megillat Ta'anit. The major sections, most of Megillat Ta'anit, are the laws of Chanukah. That means Chanukah was the text of the very first Sefer after Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim. The first Sefer to be written was Megillat Ta'anit, and most of it is Chanukah. So the whole thing is, and many of the Mepharshim say that Chanukah was so much a part of the Jewish people, it was unnecessary to make a Talmud, a section of the Talmud for it. As many say, by the way, there are other mitzvahs that most probably require a great deal more elaboration. Tefillin. There's no Masechta Tefillin. There's no Masechta Tzitzis. There's no Masechta Mezuzah. But all of these appear in Talmud. And Hanukkah was the first thing that was written, before anything else was written. So that from a historic point of view, it's nonsense. It's nonsense to say that, you know, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, seven generations after Hillel, had a breakus with Hanukkah. He didn't like Hanukkah. By the way, maybe even more important, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was from the house of David, but not on the male side, on the female side. Now the Chashmonaim, what about the family of Aaron? Who was Aaron HaKohen's wife? Huh? Elisheva, Bat Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon Ben Aminadav. That means the Kohanim are from the family of Yehuda on the female side, just as Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi is. So in what way is Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi more from the house of David than the Chashmonaim are from the house of Yehuda? Lo Yosef Shevet Mi Yehuda. There's as much royal blood flowing through Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi as there is flowing through the Chashmonaim. So it's ridiculous to say that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was upset with them that they took away Malchus from my family. What do you mean Malchus from your family? Gemara says the Befeirish, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said he was from the female side. There's a great deal more that can be said, but the point being the following, and this is certainly the most important point of all. The entire edifice that is called Torah Sheba'al Peh, the oral law, stands on the shoulder of a giant called Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. To say about Rabbeinu HaKadosh that he had personal vendetta or his own agenda, and on that basis he decided what was going to be in the Mishnah and what was not going to be in the Mishnah, is a destruction of Torah Sheba'al Peh. It's a destruction of Torah Sheba'al Peh. We cannot attribute to him. Gemara says about him that before he died he was extremely wealthy. He lifted his 10 fingers heavenward and he said, Rabbeinu Shalom, you know that in my whole life I didn't enjoy my wealth. Nothing clung to my hands, my fingers. I didn't benefit from my wealth. My whole life was dedicated to Torah. I'll tell you, other people may lie at certain moments in their life, but on the deathbed, I have a feeling that most people say the truth. Rabbeinu HaKadosh lifts his hands heavenward and he says, he didn't personally enjoy any of his wealth through his whole lifetime. How that got into the Tamei and Hagam, I don't have a clue. I don't know. But the important thing is, we have to understand that the Torah giants are completely different than other sorts of leaders or people who aspire to leadership. I mean, everybody, of course, talks about policies and the welfare of the country and the needs of the people, but you know, and I know, that so much of this is a desire for power, prominence, position. We know now that we can see through it. If all of those people who are making all the statements today would only know that we're not so stupid. Are we? Well, we are, huh? We're not so stupid. We see through it all. I'm just waiting. I can't wait for another month from now to see how many Nivga'im, I don't know how to say it in, how many are going to be left on the field over there, and who will remain afterwards. But when we talk about Rabbeinu HaKadosh, the one who wrote the Mishnah, there was no such consideration whatsoever. So anyway, here we have Lo Yosef Shevet Yehuda, the Ramban here, and the Ramban in the Halacha. On the one hand, the Ramban over here says that yes, they were punished, and that's the end of the house of Chashmonaim, a terrible punishment, because they assumed a position that was not theirs. That is the opinion of the Ramban, but it has nothing to do with Hanukkah, because Hanukkah, on the contrary, the Ramban in the Halacha says This was God's promise to Adam, that your family is going to be a family through whom I'm going to bring great miracles in the time of Bayit Sheni. And of course we have the Rambam. The Rambam sees it all in a positive light. Chazra HaMalchut Yisrael, kingdom, a royal house returned to Israel for over 200 years. And by the way, that Rambam, we once talked about it, some years ago we talked about it, that Rambam is therefore saying that what was terribly important, the ultimate victory of the house of the Hashmonaim, was not only coming into the Bet HaMikdash and lighting the menorah. The ultimate victory is when they were able to establish independence. Without independence, there is no freedom of religion. There was no such thing as, well, we would arrive at some kind of a modus vivendi with Greece, and, you know, we will be part of the Greek Empire, and we'll keep Torah. There was no such thing. Ultimately, the only way in which they were going to succeed was by virtue of the fact that they became independent and they established their own malchus. So therefore, independence is a terrible, terribly important thing according to the Rambam. And Rashi, of course, also we see looks at the house of Hashmonaim in an extremely positive light. And certainly, with all other things that we've said, there's no way that we can assume that the words of the Talmidim and Haggim were correct. There was some mistake over there. Okay, that's it.